Hey, this is Xenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moon Boy News. We got a great episode for you guys today. We're going to be giving a full update on full chain membership proofs and trying to make sense of when we are finally going to get this update. There's a lot of moving parts, so I thought it would be a good idea to spend some time going over the latest discussions, in particular the Monero Research Lab meeting last week, which got pretty heated. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the Pied Piper, Michael Saylor, and what looks like the beginning of the end for MicroStrategy. And also, we will be talking a little bit about precious metals, but first, as I mentioned, we're going to be covering full chain membership proofs. There are a lot of different moving parts going on right now, a lot of different things that are being worked on. And of course, as full chain membership proofs have been worked on, other things have come up, right? The whole Cubic scandal, which really came and went, that distracted the developers for a while, understandably, right? There was a lot of focus on proof of work. Then there was this proof of stake discussion. Then there was other discussion based on that, a lot of arguing. Nothing really changed yet. There's some proposals to improve the RandomX protocol that we have. But generally speaking, things are kind of the same, right? We survived this attack. The hash rate's at all-time highs. We're doing great right now. So it's kind of just a bump in the road, so to speak. But of course, this takes the time of developers. And developers are, you know, constantly being yelled at by us plebeians. And this really brings me to the first thing. And this is kind of a reoccurring theme. It's that Monero just needs more senior developers. Bottom line. It's not just me saying this. The developers are saying this. Anybody looking at Monero right now will say this. We need more people working on it. And the developers we have right now, they're working overtime. They're passionate. They're doing a great job. But they could use some help. And, you know, unfortunately, this is kind of the thing that's kind of holding Monero back right now and holding full chain membership proofs back. So this past week, there was a CCS proposal that was put out by this guy named Perfect Damon. Perfect Damon, who actually submitted this as Anon. It's the same guy, though. He has done a ton of work on Monero's Damon, basically. Hence his name, nickname at least, Perfect Damon. And he's an expert in C++. Very smart guy. And he created a CCS proposal for 150 XMR, 3 months of work. And what he was going to do, or what he is going to do, I should say, is clean up the code and make it better. We need this to pass. And so I saw this proposal this week, posted it on my Twitter, and it passed. And that's awesome. This is a step in the right direction. We need more eyes on the code. We need more people working on it. So now we have an expert who's going to go in there and he's going to make things better. That's a win. So positive news to start things off, because we need more of that. And I don't know where to find that. A lot of this comes from more recognition. So over time, Monero has gotten more and more developers from different projects. You know, Ruckneum, he was in Bitcoin Cash, right? I believe Berman was with the Haven protocol. So, you know, over time, we've kind of collected, you know, these developers, and I'm sure there will be more in the future, right? So there's that. There's also, if the price goes up, naturally more people want to work on Monero because they'll be incentivized to do so, right? And lastly, if we have these CCS proposals, we need to get them funded, right? And that's what we did. So this Perfect Damon one is a great first step in the right direction, because the biggest problem facing Monero right now is technical debt. Now, I talked about this last episode, or No, it was not the last episode. It was the episode before I went on vacation, I think. Basically, technical debt is it's essentially code that has just, it needs to be improved, essentially. And it's kind of just sitting around, and it's making other things worse because the code can be cleaned up. And Monero just has a lot of this, and it's kind of built up over time, and we need a lot of people just kind of going through the code and making it better. And what's been found out is during these stress tests with full chain membership proofs, the Monero daemon is not able to handle these full chain membership proofs transactions. It's just way too heavy, and there's a lot of crashing going on. Transactions aren't sending correctly. And basically, that is at the current transaction volume right now. So like 25,000 transactions a day, that would not be able to work with full chain membership proofs. And that is entirely because the code needs to be cleaned up. So that's why this is like really, really serious. Now, the good news is these stress tests that have been going on now for months have found a lot of bugs. Optimizations have already been found. We're moving in the right direction, all right? But this is actually the main thing holding us back right now, is we need to make sure that we are releasing full chain membership proofs and things are just going to break, right? Obviously, right? So this is like the main thing right now. And problematically, I don't have a judgment of when this will be good. I've talked to several developers and it's kind of up in the air as to when it's going to get done. But from what I can tell, this is the main thing holding things back. The Monero daemon just can't handle full chain membership proofs. And it's in large part due to the code not being up to date. So, fingers crossed, Perfect Daemon's going to go in there and clean a ton of stuff up and make this better. Additionally, I would imagine that with the stress tests happening and all these optimizations happening, we will be able to get something forward in the near future that will be good. So that's the first thing, is this technical debt. And the problem is the software. If I can just summarize it in one sentence, it's the software, okay? It's the Monero daemon. The problem is not the actual full chain membership proofs. I think we are still waiting on an audit, but the full chain membership proofs, they work, okay? Again, assuming we're not spamming the network in these stress tests, the actual transactions work, which is awesome. So full chain membership proofs are basically done in and of itself. It's just they're not ready to be shipped. And so, you know, we want this to happen, but we can't just throw it out there because we can't just have nodes just failing everywhere, right? Now then, the second major thing that is being discussed right now, and this is actually the big controversy over the past week, is discussing the block size and the maximum block size, or if we even should have a maximum block size. And this has been a debate really between Arctic Mine and everybody else, essentially. But also there's some other camps as well. But basically, again, with this technical debt, it's been found out that Monero can't handle block sizes that are too big. Everything would just crash. So what developers are trying to figure out is what they should cap the maximum size for blocks to be. And the question is whether we should even have a cap or not. And this is where it gets confusing. Arctic Mine, he's of the opinion that it doesn't really matter, and that because of technological advancements over time, it's better, in his opinion, it's better to just have everything set up so that long-term Monero will thrive as digital cash because it will grow with the technology. And he is of the opinion that block sizes should just continue growing. Now, on the other side, developers like such as Luke Parker are saying it's not going to work anyways. Why would we allow blocks to be up to a gig in size. And yes, a gigabyte. Why would we allow blocks to be that large when it would crash the network? And he's arguing that we should put a cap at least temporarily. Arctic Mind is saying any sort of cap is bad because if the project becomes ossified, we won't be able to change that. Which is a fair point. I mean, it kind of happened with Bitcoin, right? Where it became ossified and now they're kind of stuck with what they have. But on the other side, though, like, it is kind of unrealistic to want blocks to be that big, especially when like span blocks could absolutely destroy the Monero network. Or if we saw with the whole Cubic situation, if a miner were to take over the network, or if they're mining a majority of the blocks, they can just spam transactions for free. Because if they solve the block, they don't have to charge themselves a fee if they don't want to. And they could fill transactions with just junk, and it would be really bad, right? And that would impact the Monero network. So there's been a lot of back and forth here. I'm going to read this summary here from the Monero Research Lab Twitter. Well, it's the unofficial Monero Research Lab Twitter. It says here, Arctic Mind's latest proposal keeps a 500 kilobyte penalty-free zone, but allows aggressive long-term growth, 2 times per 100,000 blocks, with a 16 times short-term surge factor. Most participants oppose such rapid growth. Justin Berman says, if I'm calculating correctly, the latest proposal allows blocks to grow to 611 megabytes within 1 year. 611 megabyte blocks would destroy Monero. Jeffro says, nodes would not be able to sync or propagate faster than blocks are created. Storage requirements may become infeasible. Preland says 611 megabyte blocks would be an issue, in my opinion. OverNextMR says even storage read-write speeds would be crippled by receiving a 600 megabyte block. Moving on, Ruknium highlighted verification time pressure even at smaller sizes. He says, even with node code with zero inefficient overhead, in quotes, the proposed full chain membership proof allowed block sizes would stress hardware. With 16 megabyte blocks, which are allowed with quick scaling in Arctic Mind's proposal, as far as I know, you can get 2,466 one input, two output transactions into a block, which would require 93 seconds on a single thread to verify. If an adversary tries to pack blocks, they can slow down verification further by selecting slow transaction types. Several compromises were suggested. Delayed fast scaling, so slow for 2 years, then fast. Ruknium says slow scaling parameters in effect for, let's say, 2 years after the hard fork, then the fast scaling parameters in effect after that. Another suggestion was soft forkable caps, or a, quote, block size bomb, end quote, that activates aggressive scaling later unless overridden. Third suggestion is extending the long-term median window. Gingeropoulos said, I think extending the long-term median window should be investigated. This forces the market or the attacker to really justify the block size increase. Arctic Mind then argued that aggressive scaling is required to permanently break chain surveillance economics. He says that his proposal can destroy blockchain surveillance. So again, Arctic Mind's being pretty stubborn here, because like the software obviously can't handle what he's proposing. So it's like, why would we introduce something that would be able to break, right? And most of the developers are pushing back on Arctic on that. Now, he does have a point though, that, you know, we have to be on top of this. We can't just kind of like, you know, not improve in the future if the software improves. But the software hasn't improved yet. So why would we release it before it is improved, right? So that's kind of the underlying debate. And there was a lot of back and forth. And I'm just reading a summary of this. There is a ton of chat. If you want to read it, you can look up the Monero IRC logs online and read through not only the Monero Research Lab, but the Monero Research Lounge. They've been basically debating this the past couple weeks. There's a lot I'm kind of leaving out. Now, an interesting side note, though. So I mentioned this in the previous episode where I talked about technical debt, about Samsung Galaxy player Justin Ehrenhofer, and how Justin Ehrenhofer is basically, he works for chain analysis companies and he works with feds, which is, yeah, it sucks ass. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I like Justin a lot, but you're playing on the other team now, right? Like, fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, it sucks. Listen, I get you have a job, you have a career, you're getting paid, you can do your thing, but like, you're working with feds. You know what I mean? It's bullshit. Anyway, Justin Ehrenhofer, he's in the chat for the Monero Research Lab. And he's contributing. He also does magic funding as well, which is a big deal. So it's not like he doesn't contribute, but again, it's just BS that he's whatever. Anyway, so anyways, Arctic Mind calls out Justin again. And during the debate, he raised up the conflict of interest of Justin Ehrenhofer working with a blockchain analysis firm, Naxo. Arctic Mind says, SGP, or Justin, I will be blunt, conflict of interest. Ruckneum then says, Justin, I don't know why you decided to start a blockchain surveillance firm. Baffling decision that will follow you forever. Yeah, I mean, it's not just those two guys. Like, this is basically the belief of pretty much all the people working with Monero. They'll be cordial when they're discussing, like, you know, different things and different ideas. But yeah, this is like obviously something that's going to follow Justin around now forever, because like, yeah, you're working with blockchain surveillance and this is a privacy project. Why are you even here? You know what I mean? So the whole thing is kind of weird. And yeah, there's some shots being taken by Arctic Mind. He gets a little sassy, man. He gets really passionate about this whole scaling stuff, but you know, I understand it. I get passionate about things too, you know, so. Now, again, the good news, or I don't know if it's good news, but this doesn't impact the release of the hard fork necessarily. Again, we're weighed down by the technical debt. So that's really the thing. This is kind of a sideshow. It's an important sideshow, though, because this is an important debate. But this is kind of on the side. Now, another thing that's on the side is Carrot. Now, Carrot is the new address protocol being worked on by Jeffro. And he just had a CCS proposal, by the way, that was also funded for his work for Carrot. How awesome is that? So we had two major CCS proposals funded this week. I mean, this is what I'm talking about when I say Monero is based as fuck. You know, we're in a downturn, right? Crypto's dumping everywhere. But we're chopping along, you know. We're just slowly improving, and that's when you know you're with a project that's legit, right? So, anyways, this is a whole different thing, and it's so. Anyways, Carrot is a whole new address scheme. There's a lot of important stuff with it regarding post quantum and things like that. And so there's a lot of work being done here. And the problem, though, is Jeffro says that he wants there to be a code audit. He wants the Carrot auditing to be done in parallel with the Daemon auditing. And he says that after that's done, the hard fork activation is 6 months after that release. So that would... So, like, if we are releasing Carrot as part of the hard fork, this would actually cause a delay until, like, quarter four of 2026, if not quarter one, 2027. I know. And so I'm, like, reading this, like, do we really want to, like, delay it that much? I'm not so sure about that, right? So I don't think this is going to happen, but this is something that rang an alarm bell for me, because I saw that and I kind of... kind of did like a, huh, really? Are we really going to wait that long for something like this? So I'm not really sure. And furthermore, I've heard that Carrot can actually be implemented as a soft fork. So I'm not even positive that this would require a hard fork, or if it even would be part of a hard fork. So yeah, I'm actually not really sure if this is even going to be a thing necessarily. But very interesting nonetheless, though. And yeah, this is not to say that Jeffro's doing bad work at all or anything. No, he's doing phenomenal work, and we want Carrot to happen. But that's just something I picked up during the Monero Research Lab meeting last week. The last thing to talk about is this thing called Bullet Star. So this was a proposal that was put forward recently by, hold on, let me pull it up. By this guy, EMSCZKP, Emmanuel Scala. And he basically, he has this proposal for bulletproofs or improvements on bulletproofs just to make them smaller, I guess, and or more efficient. And he's asking for Monero to do this research and all that. I got a lot of praise from the developers in the Monero Research Lab. The only problem, though, is that while this is an improvement to the zero-knowledge proof mechanisms behind full-chain membership proofs, or at least that's what the proposal is saying, the problem is this wouldn't be quantum resistant. And this would there would be pushback on this just because there's kind of a leading belief now that if we're implementing something in Monero, it should be quantum resistant. And so that was the only thing, but I still think this is going to go forward just because the research will be valuable. And then later on, I believe you could apply like, you know, quantum resistant techniques over it or something. At this point, the math is kind of, you know, I'm a retard. Okay. I'm not understanding this. So, you know what I mean? But yeah, I thought that was another cool little tidbit from the latest Monero Research Lab. So, those are every Wednesday. I encourage you guys to lurk because there's some great discussion happening right now. We have some really smart people working on Monero. It gets me fired up, man. I get fired up talking about this. I'm looking forward to hanging out with these guys at Monerotopia. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So when should we expect full chain membership proofs? So my best guess would be Q2 2026. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of excitement going into the new year. And I think a lot of this technical debt's going to get fixed and we're going to feel comfortable enough releasing full chain membership proofs as the transaction size at the current transaction size that we have now, and that it shouldn't be an issue with the daemons. The daemons should be running much more efficiently. I think that that is a very realistic guess. So I would say like 50% chance Q2, probably like 5 to 10% chance Q1, and then, you know, like 30% chance Q3 2026, and the rest you can put in Q4. That would be my best guess. Because it's looking like a lot of the actual stuff regarding full chain membership proofs is like already done. So that's not really a concern anymore. The concern is on the daemon and improving that. And once that is like really hashed out and the developers feel a lot more comfortable with the stress tests going on, I think we're really going to start to see movement towards, you know, getting something. All right. So that is the full chain membership proofs portion of the show. There also was discussion of possibly timeline discussion amongst the developers happening. I forgot where I read that, but hopefully they do some sort of revisiting of when they think everything's going to be finished, because I mean, obviously, we're just itching to get this implemented. This is a huge deal. We're all excited. We all can't wait. So, should be happening soon, TM. All right, so next up, we're going to be talking about the Pied Piper, Michael Saylor, who has been enticing the Moon Boys for the past several years and is finally seeing the abyss of a bear market in front of them. And we saw this week the first cracks in the foundation starting to form. And, you know, yeah, really the past week or two, the entire market has just been puking. And it's been very surprising to a lot of people. And on a broader note, too, a lot of things don't look good right now. There's a lot of just news coming out that's just highly concerning with Japan, the news with that whole carry trade situation. We will be talking a little bit about silver later, but that's concerning for the banking institutions as well, potentially with COMEX not being able to meet demand for physical silver. You got credit card debt, all-time highs, mortgages, and it's a mess right now, right? And with quantitative tightening ending, I think at midnight tonight, we are entering an interesting time. And it's possible that this crypto bull run might be over. Who knows? It could also go right back up after some quantitative easing, which I'm sure is forthcoming. Nonetheless, Bitcoin's had a rough week. And because of this, there's been a lot of people, you know, panicking, starting to panic, selling, whatever, typical stuff. But now we're seeing Michael Saylor also react, and Strategy reacted with a press release they dropped today announcing the establishment of a $1.44 billion USD reserve. That's right. They have a Bitcoin reserve, and now they have a dollar reserve. Yeah. Why would they need a dollar reserve? So I'm going to read this press release. I'm going to only read bits and pieces of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But it says here that Strategy today announced that it has established a USD reserve of $1.44 billion to support the payment of dividends on its preferred stock and interest on its outstanding indebtedness. The USD reserve was funded using proceeds from the sale of shares of Class A common stock under Strategy's at-the-market offering program. Strategy's current intention is to maintain a USD reserve in an amount sufficient to fund at least 12 months of its dividends, and Strategy intends to strengthen the USD reserve over time, with the goal of ultimately covering 24 months or more of its dividends. The maintenance of this USD reserve, as well as its amount, terms, and conditions, remains subject to Strategy's sole and absolute discretion, and Strategy may adjust the USD reserve from time to time based on market conditions, liquidity, needs, and other factors. It says here, establishing a USD reserve to complement our BTC reserve marks the next step in our evolution, and we believe it will better position us to navigate short-term market volatility while delivering on our vision of being the world's leading issuer of digital credits, said Michael Saylor. The next step in our evolution. The world's leading issuer of digital credit. This fucking guy, man. I swear to God. Now, here's another interesting part of this. This kind of got buried. But it said here that the guidance, okay, it says Strategy today announced updates to its assumptions underlying its previously issued forward guidance and Bitcoin KPI targets for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2025, previously published on October 30th, 2025. That guidance assumed a Bitcoin price of $150,000 as of December 31st, 2025. Based on the approximate consensus midpoint of third-party research analyst year-end Bitcoin price estimates available as of that date. Bitcoin is a highly volatile asset, and the trading price of Bitcoin has declined from approximately $1,100,000 on October 30th to as low as $80,000 on November 21st. In light of the recent trading prices of Bitcoin, Strategy is updating its assumptions for the price of Bitcoin as of year-end 2025 to reflect a range of prices consistent with the recent trading history of Bitcoin. And it then goes on to say that their new estimated year-end 2025 Bitcoin price range is between 85,000 and 110,000. So they've switched their guidance of 150,000 to between 85 and 110,000. Oh yeah. So a lot to unpack here. Now, let's go back to the initial question. Why are they creating a USD reserve? So if you've been following MicroStrategy, what they have been doing is they have been selling things to get dollars. And with those dollars, they buy Bitcoin. Okay, this is the grift. They issue stock. People buy the stock. They have dollars, then they buy Bitcoin. But then they need other things to entice people to give them money. So they came up with preferred stock options like Strike and Stride. There's like five or six of them now. And basically what these are dividends payouts. Basically, you buy like a bond, basically, and you're receiving yield on that each year. And that yield is paid by MicroStrategy. So when you buy this stock, this preferred stock option, you give MicroStrategy money, and what do they do with the money? They buy Bitcoin. So they receive dollars, they buy Bitcoin, and now you have a preferred stock where you receive dollars from MicroStrategy annually. But you might be wondering, where is MicroStrategy going to get the dollars? Well, up until this point, they've just been creating more and more preferred stocks. If you're scratching your head and thinking, that sounds like a scam, it's because it is. This is a Ponzi scheme. If you don't know where the yield is coming from, you are the yield. And that's what's fucking happening right now. So now, they've trapped themselves into a corner here. The market is just puking everywhere. They need dollars. So they sold more common stock. And instead of buying Bitcoin with the common stock, they created a dollar reserve. Basically, they're openly admitting that, yeah, we just sold a bunch of stock and they bought like $11 million worth of Bitcoin. But the bulk of that money that they just sold is going to be used to pay these dividends. And it goes on to say in that press release that they intend to strengthen the USD reserve over time. So they plan on actually adding to it over time, probably selling more stock to increase the holdings that they have. Because the show must go on, right? So they have to keep making these payments. And I've mentioned this in the past too. Some of those preferred stocks, they can just shut off the yield if they want. Obviously, they don't want to do that, but they could if they wanted to. They're actually not contractually obligated to pay some of those. That's how junky these fucking options are. So, I mean, this whole thing is a rotten scam. And they're desperate for dollars, because the only other thing they can do is sell their Bitcoin. And that's the next thing that's going to happen. They claim they haven't done it yet, but they're eventually going to have to, unless Bitcoin goes up a lot, which could happen. But if it doesn't happen, Saylor's going to be drowning. All right, so I'm going to play a clip here of Michael Saylor saying that he plans on selling Bitcoin if the MNAV goes below one. All right, so here's what he says.
Above one times MNAV, the most efficient thing for a public company like ours to do is to sell the equity. Below one times MNAV, we just get lots of questions. And there are skeptics that are doubtful, well, could you sell the Bitcoin? Would you sell the Bitcoin? And the answer is yes, we could sell the Bitcoin. We could also sell Bitcoin derivatives. And we would do that because that's in the best interest of the shareholders. And because it's in the best interest of the shareholders, it's best for the company and therefore best for the Bitcoin community, as well as the credit community, as well as the equity investors.
So there you have it. It's in the best interest of the shareholders in the Bitcoin community. He would be open to selling Bitcoin. And that's going to be coming up pretty soon. I don't know what formulas exactly that they're using, but if you look at the average Bitcoin buys, it's been pretty bad this year. He's basically just been buying tops. And He's been hedging on Bitcoin reaching 150,000 and at least, and we're nowhere near that. And again, if he has to start selling Bitcoin, that's a cascading effect, because if Michael Saylor sells, it's ogre, you know, and we're going down to 30,000. And that's the thing, you know, when you are constantly giving people hopium, all of this is built on hopium, you know, and that's all the people here are people who are trying to get rich. They're all moon boys and they're just saying yes to whatever Michael Saylor puts in front of them. But now we're entering a potential financial crisis. And if that happens, you better believe risky assets are going to be dumped. And that's why Bitcoin is not doing that well right now. And for that matter, pretty much all of cryptocurrency. It's pretty rough out there. I'm not going to spend much time talking about Zcash now. I'm sure we'll talk about this in the future. But yeah, Zcash, to change the subject a little bit, they dumped fucking hard. They're now below Monero in price and in market cap. I think they're down like 50% on the week. I mean, it's literally pump and dump. It's, we knew this was going to happen. It was a matter of when, not if. And yeah, there's nothing there. You're telling me that the entire market was going down and Zcash was the only thing pumping, that was organic, when no one's talked about Zcash at all for years? Yeah, super organic, guys. Whatever. So they're dumping. Everything's dumping. One of the best performers, though, has been Monero. And it's great to see. And you know, we've been talking about this. It's a great looking chart. The BTC ratio is finally recovering. I mean, we've been waiting for that for so long. And we've just been putting in the work. And you want to know why Monero is performing well during downturns? And I do expect Monero to dump more from its position now, but the reason Monero can weather the storm better than other cryptocurrencies is because it's actually used. And this is a core belief I have based on darknet market maximalism. People need Monero. So there's no bear market for needing peer-to-peer digital cash. It's really as simple as that. And so people are constantly trying to get Monero, and that just creates this environment where it's the movement of Monero never really stops. There's no bear market for it, at least for its usage. You know, the price might go down, but its usage will always remain. And that is so crucial for a cryptocurrency. So we'll see what happens, you know, long term with that. It will be interesting, though, because, yeah, during this dump, Monero's kind of just held its value. I think it's maybe even gone up a little bit. I think it was at like $400 prior to the dump, and it's basically still at $400. So pretty cool to see. Now, another news, I mentioned this earlier, the whole precious metals thing. So silver is just on the loose. It is in price discovery right now. And, you know, I am a precious metals Chad. I've talked about this before. I do like gold and silver. I actually had this like kind of like step back moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, am I a precious metals moon boy? I kind of am. But it's not really like me wanting to get rich or anything. It's more like me just wanting the world like running on like hard money, you know, on good money, on actual money. And gold and silver is money. And of course, gold is much more rare. And gold has this, I guess it has this like heavenly quality to it. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, if you ever have held like gold in your hand, it's got this like power to it. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like, for whatever reason, humans are like attracted to it. I'm like pretty sure this is like a genetic God-given thing that we have, where we're like attracted to gold. I'm not really sure, but gold's pretty awesome. And it's cool how it's always existed in like, you know, culture, and how there's that concept of scarcity, how everyone's been mining it around the world over time, and how it's part of all these different cultures and stuff. And it can survive a nuclear holocaust too. I think that's pretty cool. Then there's downsides, of course. You can't just send it anywhere, right? It's kind of a pain in the ass to do that. You know, definitely not as convenient as sending Monero, right? But it's perfectly fungible. It's an element, right? So I've always really liked gold. And silver is also pretty cool. I do like silver. I like the idea that it can also be used for things as well. You know, it's actually used as a part of like solar and like things like that. So I think that's really cool. And like with gold, it's an element. So when you're holding it, you're like holding an element. I think I've always been like interested in things like that. So I am a little bit of a precious metals moon boy, but it's more like I just love the concept of like the way I look at Monero and Bitcoin. It's like the best qualities of like precious metals is what we want for cryptocurrency. And like we should look at those like precious metals as like a major influence. That's how I really believe Monero should develop, and that's why I believe in like the egalitarian concept with the mining, for example, fair distribution. Everyone can just, you know, mine on their own. I think that's very important. And it's something we're discovering. I really like that concept where we're all at the same time discovering this commodity. It's not just given to us, right? We have to actually go out of our way and mine it and spend capital to mine it. I really like that concept. The fungibility, of course, is really important. I mean, Bitcoin obviously fails in this regard, and Monero has greatly improved on it. And that's huge, I think. So these things, I think, are really important. So it's been really cool this year seeing gold finally have a very good year, and silver now rallying. And so there's a whole rabbit hole that I'm not going to really go into here about COMEX, but it's very possible that silver might go on a run because through derivatives, the price of silver has essentially been suppressed over a long period of time. And when you suppress price for so long, once it breaks out, you know, watch out. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, yeah, I do think silver's got a potentially bullish run ahead, and that's just good for a currency in general. You know, I really like gold and silver performing well because we need more versions of good money. I think we can all agree on that. So next up, Nano Banana Pro dropped last week, which is the latest AI image generator. And this one went kind of viral due to this one prompt that was submitted on the earlier version and now in the pro version. And basically the prompt was like a girl sitting at a restaurant, and she's got her face in her hands and her eyes are closed and she's smiling. And you know, the older image looks good. Like if you, considering it's just a prompt that created this, it looks good, but it's glossy, right? It's got this like glossiness that AI does show, that which you can tell that okay, that's not the real thing, right? Or that's not real. However, the pro version, I'm telling you guys, if I just saw that image, there would be no way I would tell that is not real. It's basically, it looks like an Instagram picture. It's very, the weird thing about it is that it's not really, it's crossed the uncanny valley where it's no longer uncanny. And that's like very different. You know, it's kind of insane. Like I've seen like very realistic artwork and stuff, which is great. But the fact that this is just generated from a prompt from a computer is like terrifying. And it's also terrifying because it's only going to get more and more realistic. And I don't really think people understand like how realistic it's getting. So check that out. I'll leave a link to that in the description. This is from The Guardian. The FBI spied on a Signal group chat of immigration activists, records reveal. You know, I'm not going to read this whole article here, but basically it was found that there is a so it says activist groups have expanded efforts to observe and document courthouse activities in recent months as Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has increasingly been detaining immigrants who have shown up to court for routine hearings. An ICE directive issued the day after Donald Trump took office in January established that agents could arrest immigrants at court. The practice has been restricted, or had been restricted under the Biden administration, due to the concerns that court arrests could interfere with the fair administration of justice. So this has been going on. And the FBI's report from August, prepared by its New York division, does not make clear how the Bureau accessed the Signal group. The Signal platform, widely used by activists, is known for its end-to-end encryption. Typically, the only way law enforcement can access messages is if they are directly included in the chat, are sent copies from a participant, or have access to members' unlocked phones. The FBI said the information came from a sensitive source with excellent access, and introduced the report as a warning about extremist actors targeting law enforcement officers and federal facilities. In late May, an individual participated in a debrief session held via a Signal call within the CourtWatch Signal group chat, the FBI wrote, without identifying the individual or the specific group or organizations involved. That person discussed how to improve future activities near federal facilities in New York City, including 26 Federal Plaza, 201 Varick Street, and 290 Broadway. The report continued listing the addresses of three immigration courts in Manhattan. Collecting media of activities was critical information. Media included photo and videos of law enforcement officers, including their badges, faces, names, license plates, law enforcement vehicles in the interior of federal facilities. Discussions in the chat included instructions on where to go and what to say in order to gain access to federal courtrooms, with the FBI noting that members of the group were told which floors to visit and to tell officials they were there to observe, with statements like, "I'm due at a 9:30 hearing." The FBI added CourtWatch is a private invite-only encrypted Signal application group chat created by the identified individual. In private encrypted online chats, the identified individual is known to instruct protests participants to use against law enforcement. So it's not clear how they got access to this group chat. You know, you see this headline, right? The FBI spied on a Signal group chat. You might be thinking Signal's compromised. It doesn't appear to be that way. It seems like they have someone who's like basically undercover, who got access to their group chat and is basically, you know, well, they have access to it now. They have all the chat logs. And I mean, this is what's going to happen. You know, if you have a more of an authoritarian government, you're going to have pushback from that, obviously. And yeah, I mean, they've been pretty authoritarian lately, and it's not surprising that there's been this reaction. So, of course, now they are putting a bunch of undercovers around, undercover agents, to get more information on the dissidents. All right. Last thing we want to say, the European Parliament, this is from VX Underground, it says the European Parliament has decided that the government and large tech companies are responsible for babysitting your children. They have voted to work on legislation which makes social media platforms such as TikTok, X, and Meta liable for individuals under the age of 16 to be on their platforms. Hence, they must in some capacity perform age verification. This is great news. I'm sure many of you are excited to present your official government identification to people like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, whoever the fuck owns TikTok, Larry Ellison, the Chinese government. I don't know anymore. The government and large tech companies know what's best for you and your family, not you. Yeah, says it all right there. I mean, it's going to be a mess. And we've seen this too, where like when they have implemented like age verification and then the age verification stuff gets leaked, then that's just a major vulnerability. Now you have people's accounts directly tied to their, you know, driver's license. A lot of kids are stupid. And not just kids, people in general use the same usernames across platforms. Now you're tying a name to that username. You can go around and follow that person and stuff. Now you have their address too. And oh man, it's just, anyway, this is messy. It's going to be a shit show. We know what's coming, right? Digital ID, whatever. But yeah, Europe is leading the charge for that as usual. Okay, now we are at the end of the show. We're now going to get to some super chats and then wrap things up. The first one here is from Don't Be Gay, who gives 0.057 XMR. Thank you very much. And he says, I met a transgender yesterday, and by some miracle, they got the girl voice perfected. I didn't know this was possible. Quick question, sir. If I liked the feminine transgender voice just a little bit, does that make me gay now? Thanks. Well, thank you very much. Don't be gay. I gotta say, I'm happy I moved the super chats to the end of the episodes for questions like this. Because can you imagine, like, I open the show like, hey guys, big show today. We're doing this, we're doing that. Okay, now I'm reading the super chat. Yeah, am I a homosexual? This fucking guy. Dude, yeah, you are gay. I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know, man. I doubt they've perfected the girl voice, though. That's pretty hard. That's pretty hard to do. You know? So I just embrace the fact that you like men, I guess. I don't know. But thank you for the donation. I appreciate it. Next up, we got a donation from Nowhere Member who gives 0.02 XMR. Thank you. And they say, thank you for your work. I want to share useful BOG with your community. It also covers XMR. Feel free to read, criticize, and use it for tutorials. Join Simplex group. And yeah, oh yeah, so this is from Nihilist. Yeah, he's he donated in the past. Yeah, he's got this. So if you want to check that out, check out this link. It's an Onion link. It's on my XMR chat. I mean, this is a deep dive. If you want to like sit down for a couple hours and like learn some shit, definitely check out this OPSEC Bible. I mean, he goes into everything. So a lot of updates on it, a lot of really cool stuff. So thanks for that link, man. I really appreciate it. And I highly recommend people check that out. Good stuff. Next up, we got a donation from from Moongaloid, who gives 0.01 XMR. Thank you very much, Moongaloid. And he says, I started holding BTC and wearing... Oh man, I started holding BTC and wearing Michael Saylor shirts to impress my wife, but it's not working. She won't stop talking about her personal trainer boyfriend, Chad, who uses XMR. Should I swap to Zcash to maybe get her back? ? That's a good one. Thanks, Moongaloid, for that. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you're onto something there. I think she'd really respect you. If you know what you should do, buy Zcash, buy it on Coinbase, and keep it in the Coinbase, keep it out of the Coinbase exchange. That would be gigabased. And then maybe you could follow Mert and the Winklevoss twins and show your girlfriend. That'll get her really turned on, I'm sure. She'll be really into that. Oh, man. So yeah, thanks Moongaloid for that. I appreciate the donation. And lastly, Leo gives 0.03 XMR. Thank you, as always, Leo. He says, hi, Xenu. Came across a interesting book on the hoax of nuclear, A Fool's Wisdom by Stephen Young, and an interview with the writer, and he posted a link. And then he says, by the way, why is Doug Tooman happy that establishment shill Arthur Hayes talks about Monero? Is he so naive? Thank you very much, Leo. I like nuclear power, so I might have to check out that interview. I always like to hear some skepticism thrown my way, so I'll have to check that out. And yeah, regarding Doug Tooman, happy that Arthur Hayes is talking about Monero. I think Doug is just happy if anybody talks about Monero, man. That's just how Doug is. If there was a guy on Twitter selling butt plugs in XMR, he would fucking DM the guy and be like, hey, you want to be on Monerotopia next week? Like, I swear to God, dude. He really goes out of his way to like fucking get anybody talking about Monero. Like, you know, he really loves just people talking about Monero. So like he views Arthur Hayes as just someone with a lot of followers. So he thinks that's a net positive. And yeah, I don't agree with this approach. I think you guys should know that, but that's just how Doug is. You know, it's why he interviews basically every type of person, you know. And you know, for me, I'm more into you know, kind of short and sweet, curated kind of content. Doug's more of the open forum type. And there's pros and cons to each, right? But that's just that kind of how Doug is. But yeah, I didn't hear what you said about Arthur Hayes. I mean, that guy's a fucking loser, man. Definitely, like, he represents, like, the bad side of crypto. One of the first lieutenants of Michael Saylor, you know? Just, yeah, constant pump and dumper. And, you know, one thing that, like, does give me some pause is, like, we will eventually have to deal with a lot of these types of people in Monero. I mean, I'm assuming Monero will continue to grow. And we're going to have these types enter the space. And it's going to get ugly. Because how do you deal with that friction, right? Because you're going to have my side be like, fuck these guys. And then you're going to have Doug be like, no, come on our show. You know what I mean? And I like to be nice to people. I don't like to like make enemies necessarily. But like that's when it starts to get hard, right? When a community culture is challenged and you have these fucking vultures coming in who just want to get rich and pump and dump on people. And I'm of the opinion we should keep them out. I don't care if there's a short-term price pump that comes along with it. Fuck that. I'd rather preserve the culture. But, you know, other people feel differently. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think that Doug has done so much great for Monero that, like, I don't think he means wrong by it. I genuinely don't. It's just he is of the opinion that he wants more people talking about Monero. And honestly, he has a point, too. Like, more people talking about Monero all else equal is a good thing because, you know, someone like Arthur Hayes, he won't be able to destroy Monero, right? Like, we can't live in fear of that. But of course, though, a lot of people like Arthur Hayes dictating Monero policy, yeah, that would destroy Monero, right? So anyways, guys, I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for listening. Antimoonboy.com. And yeah, I'm going to be heading out now. Have a great week.